supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Contentious Senate Judiciary Committee hearings continue today around U.S. Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Those hearings included pointed questioning from area Democratic senators, Cory Booker from New Jersey, and Delaware's Chris Coons. Joining us to make sense of all of this is WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo. Matt, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Matt, why don't we start with Cory Booker. He was much in the news today. What was the gist of his questioning?
Well, it was more so what he did. Last night during the hearings, he started reading what are called committee confidential, which you can kind of think about it as classified. So the Judiciary Committee, they don't have classified documents, but members of that committee were allowed to see things that the rest of the public wasn't allowed and that the rest of the members of the Senate weren't allowed to see. Well, Senator Booker took some of those committee confidential documents and started reading them at the hearing, which broke rules. Eventually, Republicans released them or agreed to, so it became this big back and forth. But the senator could have gotten in trouble by his fellow Senate colleagues. He could have actually been booted out of the Senate and expelled if they wanted to. It became this very dramatic thing. But when I talked to Senator Booker about it, he said he's got no regrets.
So forget about his questioning my motives. Let's look at the merit of what I'm saying. Anybody can see that we are being asked to vet a candidate seeing only 10% of their resume. That's not fair. I don't even think it's really in accord with what our constitutional duty is.
And Matt, in terms of who was questioning his motives, let's now hear from Republican South Dakota Senator John Thune.
He's obviously running for president in a Democratic primary, and I just think it's all part of the political theater, that kabuki theater, that candidates that are trying to appeal to their party's base have to go through.
Matt, perhaps politics is a part of this, but Booker, if I understand correctly, defended his decision to disclose, saying what he was disclosing was not a matter of national security. What was the gist of the documents he was bringing to light?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And if you remember, and I'll remind listeners, Mr. Kavanaugh had worked under the George W. Bush administration as legal counsel. And so Republicans were claiming, hey, executive privilege, the Bush administration doesn't want these released, you know, deals with national security, et cetera. Mr. Booker is saying, no, some of these documents dealt with racial profiling. Some of them also dealt with conversations in the Bush White House about Roe v. Wade. And so Mr. Booker is saying, hey, you guys are misleading the American public here. This stuff should be a part of the record. Americans have a right to know this stuff, not just us on this committee. And as you heard from Mr. Thune, people are looking at Mr. Booker as someone eyeing the White House for 2020, and they're saying, hey, you're just trying to score political points. Mr. Kavanaugh is going to get seated. There's nothing Democrats can do about it because they're in the minority. Quit trying to score these political points and have a win. Let's focus on the judge himself.
Matt, any validity, though, to the notion that perhaps Booker was auditioning for a potential presidential run?
Well, there's a saying here in the Senate, and remember, there's only 100 senators, that there's 100 people in this building who think they all belong in the White House. So I don't think Mr. Booker's the only one auditioning for a potential stay at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Let's then move on to Delaware Senator Chris Coons. There was an interesting moment when Kavanaugh acknowledged that he and Coons went all the way back to law school knowing each other.
I know, and that's the thing. Mr. Kavanaugh seems well-liked by people on all sides of the aisle, but he's locked in this bitter, hyper-partisan warfare, which really dominates most everything in the contemporary Washington. So while the two of them may get along, when the cameras aren't rolling, the two of them have butted heads a few times, especially when it's come to Mr. Coons questioning him on his past writings and rulings on executive power. And this is what Senator Coons told me.
The judge gives answers that are correct, but misleading.
What is he referring to?
So he was talking about some of the judge's rulings, namely when it came to one of his rulings on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which Congress set that up in a way so that the president could not fire the head of that. Now, Mr. Kavanaugh ruled in one of his rulings that the actual CFPB was unconstitutional because the president should be allowed to fire anyone underneath him. And now Kunz goes a little bit further and he says, under that reading, the president, Mr. Trump, could fire special counsel Robert Mueller. And if he did, there would be no way for Congress to intervene in that except by impeaching the president. And now Mr. Kunz says that wouldn't have worked back in the Watergate days because all the tapes that we got from Mr. Nixon, which became what actually led to his ouster from office, would not have been allowed under Mr. Kavanaugh's viewing. So, yes, the whole hearings get into all these legalese things, but this is very important. The jot and tittle of these cases is vital and will impact all of our lives. This is the Supreme Court we're talking about, so the minutia here matters.
And indeed, WHYY listeners are invited to tune in at 8 this evening for an NPR special highlighting key moments of the confirmation hearings to date and looking at how a Kavanaugh confirmation might affect the Supreme Court. Matt Laszlo, we thank you for your insight this evening on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo. Should he be confirmed, Judge Brett Kavanaugh would tip the Supreme Court to the right and make overturning Roe v. Wade a possibility. For WHYY, Lucy Perkins looks at how that could affect Pennsylvania.
It began like any civilized debate about abortion.
The floodgates of outrage opened.
Are you ready to defend Roe versus Wade?
Now the fight over confirming Brett Kavanaugh begins.
There are already abortion cases in the pipeline that could reach the Supreme Court in the next couple years. And the court could change abortion laws in a couple different ways if it overturns Roe versus Wade. One scenario that really freaks out abortion rights activists is a ruling that says abortion is not a constitutional right. That would mean it would be up to states to legalize or ban abortion. So what would happen in Pennsylvania? Long story short, abortion would still be legal here. But
we return more or less to a situation like what we had before Roe was decided in the early 70s.
That's Jessica Ahrens with the ACLU. She estimates that almost half of states would ban abortion outright if Roe is overturned.
Another handful of states would protect it very explicitly, and a lot more would be in the middle, and Pennsylvania among them.
Sue Fritchie of the Women's Law Project agrees. She says that Pennsylvania doesn't have a trigger law that would immediately ban abortion, but it does have a convoluted patchwork of abortion restrictions.
We have tons of those kinds of laws. We don't have a law that generally criminalizes abortion, and I certainly hope we never do.
By that same token, we don't have a law that protects abortion.
Right.
Here's the list of Pennsylvania's abortion regulations. Abortions after 24 weeks are illegal, unless the life of the mother is in danger. Abortions based on the sex of the fetus are illegal. A minor needs parental consent unless she gets a waiver from a judge. Doctors must read a script to the patient that explains fetal development and the financial assistance that's available if she continues the pregnancy. And there's a mandatory 24-hour waiting period after that counseling session before she can have the procedure.
Please turn away.
Come on, man!
There are other options.
Every week, anti-abortion activists stand outside a Pittsburgh clinic that provides the procedure. They've protested here for decades, and they'll likely still come here if Roe is overturned. Protester Andrew Badiato comes here with his wife and baby most Saturdays.
We will be so excited when this stops, but that it by no means is the end. You know, if abortion is banned outright, will it still happen? And I think most likely, yes.
Horatio Mihaut with Liberty Counsel says the court could go further and do more than just overturn Roe.
If the rationale of the Supreme Court would be that Roe versus Wade was incorrectly decided because an unborn human being has a right to life under the Constitution, then no state could continue to allow abortions.
Mihaut opposes abortion rights, but he and Jessica Ahrens at the ACLU do agree on one thing. It's highly unlikely the court would outlaw abortion outright.
Chief Justice Roberts in particular is, I think, very savvy. So I think he's going to look for incremental opportunities to reduce the right to abortion and the access to abortion care rather than want to go, you know, whole hog.
If Roe is overturned, the issue would return to Harrisburg, where Republicans control the legislature. Democratic Governor Tom Wolf supports abortion rights. His Republican opponent this November, Scott Wagner, supports pro-life legislation. The winner of their race could decide whether Pennsylvania abortion law will go back to where it was 45 years ago. I'm Lucy Perkins in Pittsburgh.
Tune in Monday night to hear how area hospitals found a legal loophole to provide abortions before Roe, and how the Supreme Court decision made Pittsburgh one of the top abortion providers in the country. Starting next year, smartphones equipped for 5G connections will start hitting the market, though they won't be much of an upgrade unless they're connected to a new 5G wireless network. As Keystone Crossroads contributor Jim Saxa reports, the race to build those next-generation cellular networks is on, but some in Pennsylvania want to pump the brakes.
A cutesy little town in Bucks County found itself in the middle of a fight between technological progress and local control. Doylestown Borough Council President Jack O'Brien is explaining just how they got into this mess when suddenly the call cuts out.
Public Utility Commission.
Hey, Jack, you still there?
Cell phone coverage is spotty in Doylestown, and that's a bit ironic given why O'Brien was calling. The borough just fought a lawsuit to stop a cellular company from upgrading wireless coverage in the area. The company, Crown Castle, is building a web of next-gen wireless antennas. They're smaller in size and in coverage area than the big cell towers our smartphones currently connect to. And that means you have to install them all over, like one or two per block. In Doylestown, people thought that would ruin the town's charm.
In the center of town here, we have what we call historic light poles. They're cast iron and decorative. And, you know, we wanted to kind of maintain the sense of that. And they were proposing coming in and just putting wooden poles in. And in some cases, they would be 50 feet high. And they just didn't fit with the nature of the town.
The two sides ended up settling. Crown Castle gets to build their infrastructure network, but they'll have to hide it as best they can. That works for O'Brien because it'll preserve the downtown's historic vibe, and, well, you remember the call. The new cell antennas are the foundation for the next generation of cellular technology, 5G. It's like adding lanes to a highway, opening up bandwidth to connect devices and ramp up speeds at levels currently not possible. 5G backers say it'll bring about that marvelous future that we were always promised at expos like the 1962 World's Fair.
One day you may be able to call home and automatically turn off the oven. Or, from a public telephone a couple of hundred miles away, turn on your home air conditioner and have the house nice and cool.
50 plus years later, that not too distant future is already on its way, says State Rep Frank Ferry.
Basically, everybody's becoming connected in their home in one form or another. And I actually notice it when I'm out campaigning. I ring some people's doorbells, and they're not home, and they start talking to me through their phone, you know, while I'm at their doorstep.
Ferry sponsoring a bill in Harrisburg that aims to make it easier for wireless companies to build 5G networks. The bill would effectively prevent places like Doylestown from negotiating their own deals because it would strip local governments of their ability to control what gets installed on their streets. So far, local government groups have opposed the bill, but they say they're open to a compromise, so long as they keep a say in what the future of wireless technology ends up looking like in their historic downtowns. Crown Castle spokesman Rory Whalen says the bill is needed to keep Pennsylvania on pace in the 5G race.
5G is coming to every community in America. The question is, who's at the front of the line and who's at the back of the line?
That every community comes with an asterisk. No matter what happens with the bill, places with a concentration of potential customers, like Philly and Pittsburgh, will be at the front of the line. And rural Pennsylvania will probably end up waiting a whole lot longer. For Keystone Crossroads, I'm Jim Saxa.
Given the increasing frequency of and damage from natural disasters, participants at this weekend's PennApps Hack for Resilience will focus on software and hardware solutions to help those at risk. Joining me in conversation is Claire Donovan, Director of PennApps Hackathon. Claire, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Likewise, and we'll talk about the specifics of this weekend's focus. But first off, For the uninitiated, what's a hackathon?
Right. So what is a hackathon? What do we do there? So our hackathons are normally around 36 hours long, and it's basically a time for people who are passionate about making and creating to come in from all over the country, all over the world for pen apps, actually, and just have these 36 hours dedicated to making something, you know, like producing something that they can be proud of. And, you know, it's a very cool community of people because everyone's very supportive and very willing to help each other. And at the end of this weekend, you have a lot of free food in your belly, a lot of swag, and a really cool product that you can brag to your friends about when you go back home.
Some 1,200 participants this time around. They all working collaboratively, collectively, or broken down in teams?
It's broken down into teams of you can be on your own team if you want, just one person, all the way up to four people. And that doesn't mean that you're necessarily working with the same people at your school. We have a lot of people that come and just meet up at the event and decide to work together, which is a really cool collaboration.
As there are prizes, how is this judged?
We ask for judges to come in from all around the Philadelphia area. It's a really cool time for all of these Philly leaders in tech and education to come together and help us, you know, judge this event. So a lot of Penn professors choose to help out. We have people coming in from Comcast, a lot of startups from the Pennovation Center. You know, we also have recent graduates come back who helped plan Penn apps and are now working at, you know, Google, Facebook, all these cool companies.
So now focusing on resilience, what are some of the ideas in mind to form?
We would like to push a theme of making something that betters the world around you, the community, you know, your school community, your city community, or even, you know, like United States with our Hack for Resilience.
And so in this case, those who are most prone to natural disasters.
Yeah, for sure.
So what are some of the products or apps that might come from it?
Some of the cool examples is, you know, maybe designing some drone software that can help you see the wildfires, or, you know, creating an app that can give you safe places that you can go to in the event you have to evacuate your town, you know. If you think about it, there's so much need in this area, and there's so many ways that you can help with it.
Are there examples that come to mind of products or solutions that have come from previous hackathons that are now in circulation?
For the students, it's really cool to see where these hacks are going. For example, Venmo is a popular app that came out of Penn Apps, which is really cool. One team made a VR, virtual reality app that lets you, you know, speak in sign language with your hands, and then it translates it on the phone.
So a lot of the fun is taking it out of the textbook or the classroom or the lab and real world applications.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have a lot of restrictions when you're in the classroom, and at Penn Apps we say, do what you want. What are you passionate about? Go for it, you know? And that is an environment unlike so many others. So it's a great weekend.
To unleash creativity.
Just unleash,
with no strings attached. But it's an artifice to an extent that this is a 3-day, 36-hour event. What if it took 3 more days or 3 more weeks or months to come up with a product? Does the work stop on Sunday?
Well, you know, that's actually a really cool part of it, that 36 hours, really, it's just a time to focus on this one specific thing and really get the gears turning. And then once the hackathon's over, you never know. Maybe a company saw your app at the event and wants to continue working with it. Our Hack for Resilience route, for example, if they really like your hack, they said they're going to try and find a way to work with you in the Wharton Risk Center, which is a really, really cool opportunity.
So describe your sponsor, the Wharton Risk Center.
So Wharton has a lot of side groups, and they have a very specific goal. They're trying to see how they can help out with risk, and they're using natural disasters and Penn, but, you know, also risk is a very wide category. And I think what they're focusing on here is how they can involve technology in that, you know, because it's such a foolproof way to kind of reduce risk is through, you know, hacking.
Thank you so much for giving us a preview of what's to come this weekend.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Claire Donovan is director of Penn Apps Hackathon. It gets underway Friday and goes through Sunday. At 6:24, we're a little under 2 hours out from the kickoff to the NFL season. The Super Bowl champion Eagles will take the first step to defending their title when they host the Atlanta Falcons at the Link. And that's where we find WHYY's Avi Wolfman Aaron. Avi, a lot of fans. Are they keeping cool in the heat?
Yeah, doing the best they can. Seeing a lot of fans and sprinklers and tents, all sorts of contraptions to try to stay cool. And, of course, it doesn't help if you have a nice cool beverage in your hand, which plenty of people here down at the tailgate do, Dave.
What's the scene? Are they nervously excited? I think the line is fairly close for tonight's game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I talked to a guy from Delaware, from Newark, Delaware, named Lee, who's been tailgating forever, and he said, you know, I'm still a Phillies fan, so I'm pessimistic by nature, but I'm a little less pessimistic than I used to be. And by that, he kind of meant, you know, we've got a Super Bowl now. We feel like we're kind of rolling. And even if we lose this game, right, you know, Carson Wentz, the starting quarterback, will eventually come back, hopefully, and the team will get rolling toward the end of the year. There's just sort of this sense of fait accompli, but not the usual sense of fait accompli that you get with Philly fans, which is we're going to lose in the end. It feels a little bit different this time.
Thanks for setting the scene. We'll catch up with you later tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arad on Newsworks Tonight. And that's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyako, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. It's primary day in Delaware. The polls remain open until 8 as Republicans and Democrats name their choices for U.S. Senate, House of Representatives, Attorney General, and state offices. Stay with WHYY throughout the evening. We'll have hourly updates after the polls close. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller. Newsworks Tonight.